Thank you, Mr. Fay, and good afternoon, everyone. Hope you're having a happy Sabbath and doing well and had a good week. Nice to be here with everybody. Many of us have kept the Sabbath for years and decades even, some for 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years. I think I got Mr. Efimoff in and somewhere there. And Mr. Rollins used to bring his mom, so I used to kind of go up to, I think, beyond that possibly. But anyway, many of you kept this Sabbath for many, many years. And others of us have grown up in the church and kept the Sabbath all our lives. I'd be one of those people. I have coming up to almost 46 years in April of keeping the Sabbath. And all of us have probably approached the Sabbath differently over the years we've kept it. For some, possibly coming into the church as an adult, there was maybe more of a strictness or a rigidness about how they observed the Sabbath and doing the best as they learned about the Sabbath and they were learning about the people, you know, were maybe more a little more strict. And for those growing up in the church, there may have been different memories of how we approached the Sabbath, and maybe that's based on how our parents did it. But my sense is that over the years, we've gone from being maybe strict to how we observe the Sabbath, to maybe being relaxed a little bit. And possibly in some cases, we've gone from one ditch to the other. So today, I'd like to review principles from the Bible for keeping the Sabbath holy. We all can use reviews, whether we've been keeping the Sabbath for 60 years or for 2 years. Now, the purpose of today's sermon is not to prove the Sabbath. I think we've all done that, and we've all agreed that we should keep the Sabbath. Otherwise, you wouldn't probably be here today. However, we may have occasionally minimized some principles of observing the Sabbath. And I found for myself these were good reminders in my own life and thought they may be helpful to you as well. I'd like to show today that how we observe the Sabbath is an indicator of our relationship with God. And how we keep the Sabbath is probably a good indicator of our relationship with God. So it's important to review the principles from the Bible on how to observe the Sabbath. Let's take a look at the Sabbath day as a test commandment. God certainly tested the hearts of the Israelites on their willingness to obey God. If you'd like to turn with me to Exodus 16, we'll do some reviews of scriptures before we get into the principles. Just want to cover a few things here, but let's just look at Exodus 16. If you'd like to turn there with me, Exodus 16. And we'll see that the Sabbath, in many ways, was a test commandment for the Israelites if they were going to really obey God or not. I think we can glean lessons from that ourselves. So Exodus 16, and we'll start in verse 4. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain quota every day, that I may test them where they will walk in my law or not. And it shall be on the sixth day that they shall prepare what they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather daily." So notice two things. First, it says my law. You know, it's not someone else's law, Moses' law, it's my law. You know, it's important to recognize that. And two, the Sabbath would be a test, an indicator whether the Israelites would walk in God's law. Let's drop down to verse 27. Now it happened that some of the people went out on the seventh day, but they found none. And the Lord said to Moses, "How long do you refuse to keep my commandments and my laws?" Again, my commandments, my laws. You know, "See, for the Lord has given you the Sabbath." Notice that he gave them the Sabbath. It was a gift. "Therefore he gives you on the sixth day bread for 2 days. Let every man remain in his place. Let no man go out of his place on the seventh day." So the people rested on the seventh day. Observing the Sabbath was a key indicator of the quality relationship the Israelites had with God. When the Israelites stopped from observing the Sabbath, they soon drifted further and further away from God. And other laws and sin increased as they drifted away. Let's turn to Ezekiel 20. In verse 11, if you'd like to turn there with me, Ezekiel 20, verse 11. Thank you to the person who brings water up here. It's always nice to have water. So Ezekiel 20, verse 11. And let's pick this up. As I gave my statutes, again, it's interesting, it's God's statutes, and showed them my judgments, which if a man does, he shall live by them. Moreover, I also gave them my Sabbaths to be a sign between them and me, that they might know that I am the Lord who sanctifies them. Yet the house of Israel rebelled against me in the wilderness. They did not walk in my statutes. They despised my judgments, which if a man does, he shall live by them. They greatly defiled my Sabbaths. Then I said I would pour out my fury on them in the wilderness to consume them. So there's two things from this passage that I want to focus on. First, the result or benefit of keeping the Sabbath, notice it's plural there, so we can also include the feasts there, is that the Israelites would know the Lord who sanctified them. The Sabbath was a reminder of who they were and how they came to inherit the blessing of the promised land. And not keeping the Sabbath would have a negative result. And why was that? What if they broke the Sabbath immediately? You know, did God just decide to punish them? And that would be the result. The problem was that when the Israelites stopped keeping the Sabbath, they would forget who God was, who they were. And they would begin going down a different path. As if you looked in their history, they would do that many times. They would stop keeping the Sabbath. They forget who God was, a weekly reminder of what God did for them. And they would start going down a different path, and they would lead to sin, worshiping idols, and lawlessness in all areas, which ultimately resulted in God having to punish them for that disobedience. How the Israelites observed the Sabbath was a key indicator of their relationship with God. I think we can take from this how we keep the Sabbath and the importance of observing it in a holy way. It is an indicator of our relationship with God. God can look at how we observe the Sabbath and get a pretty good understanding of our mindset and attitude towards Him. Let's turn to Exodus 31, verse 12, for another important aspect about the Sabbath. Exodus 31, verse 12. Exodus 31 and verse 12. In verse 12, he says, "And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak also to the children of Israel, saying, Surely my Sabbaths you shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you. You shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, for it is holy to you. Everyone who profanes it shall surely be put to death, and whoever does any work on it, that person shall be cut off from among His people. Work shall be done for 6 days, but the seventh is the Sabbath of rest, holy to the Lord. Whoever does any work on the Sabbath day, he shall surely be put to death. Therefore, the children of Israel," and some will say this only applies to the children of Israel, and while we have to simply say we know that this applies to Abraham's seed, and those who call themselves Jews inwardly, which are those who God is calling right now, shall keep the Sabbath, to observe the Sabbath throughout their generation as a perpetual covenant. It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. A perpetual covenant, that means never ending, constant, permanent, is forever. That's what it is. We see this particular section here that the Sabbath is an identifying sign. The Sabbath is not a sign of a covenant, it is a sign of a people. The Sabbath is an identifier or a sign of God's people that is perpetual. The Sabbath is not just linked, as many like to say, to Mount Sinai, but to the beginning when God made the heavens and the earth and he rested. He intended for man to keep the Sabbath from the beginning. We can see the observance of the Sabbaths are important as an indicator of our relationship with God. When we observe the Sabbath, it helps us know God. We see that the Sabbath is a perpetual sign or indicator of those who are following God and his commandments. Now let's review now some principles as reminders on how we observe the Sabbath. Some of these will seem like pretty basic and not new to you, but let's go over them anyway. The first principle is we do not work. We do not work. Let's turn to Exodus 20, verse 8. Exodus 20, verse 8. A well-known scripture here, but let's review it anyway. Exodus 20 and verse 8 says, "Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord, your God. In it you shall do no work, you nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath and hallowed it." The first principle is simply, we don't work on the Sabbath. I think we understand that fairly well. All of us here have experienced getting off a job, you know, before sunset on Friday or school, we get off. The principle is clear. We work 6 days. On those 6 days, we perform our normal duties, our regular duties, whether it be work, school, maintaining the house, yard work, repairs, the day-to-day things that allow us to have shelter, food, you know, the clothes on our back, as the saying goes. Those are the things we do for 6 days. The Sabbath day is set aside for other things, which we'll get to later. But it's not a day for our normal work and responsibilities. Exodus 20 also mentions for us not to work, but also to those who are in our employment. So if we own a business, we're the owners of the business, we give those employees or contractors the day off. For others without a business, this may come up, maybe if you have tradesmen or painters or people like that who come to your house and want to do work. I've had people, I'm trying to engage people to do work, and they want to come and do a quote on the Sabbath. They may say, "Oh, can I finish up on the Sabbath?" And we have to politely ask them to maybe schedule a different time. So that would be the approach we generally would want to take, if all possible. The principle given is that we are not to do our normal work on the Sabbath. So let's go to the second principle. The second principle is to rest. Let's turn to Exodus 31:15. We'll see here. Exodus 31, verse 15. We read it earlier, but let's look at this. It says, Exodus 31, verse 15, it says, "Work shall be done for 6 days, but the seventh is the Sabbath of rest, holy to the Lord." And we are to rest, to recharge our physical batteries and to recharge our spiritual batteries. We can physically take a break from the daily grind. You know, we rest from the daily grind. You know, we think of the daily traffic we have to deal with, meetings, deadlines and schedules, paying bills, ironing and washing, cleaning the house, even rest from the stress of daily news. I don't tend to watch the news on the Sabbath. And just to rest from that is nice. The physical exercise and routines that, you know, for those of us who are doing physical exercise, you know, I take breaks from that. And the stresses of the world. We rest from our daily grind and responsibilities, and we focus on our relationship with God and our family and the church. The Sabbath was to be a rest from our normal stresses, and that rest was meant to be a blessing. Now, key to being able to rest properly, I have found, I'm still learning this, by the way, is to prepare for the Sabbath. Prepare for the Sabbath. Let's look at Exodus 20, verse 8. I'll read it. It says, I think we just went through this, so let me read it to you. It says, "Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy." Now, it's interesting that the word "remember" is used. The Cencino commentary says this means we should always keep the Sabbath in mind during the week. If we're thinking about the Sabbath, then we'll begin to make some of the modern-day preparations that are needed. Instead of running for 6 days and coming to an abrupt stop all of a sudden when the sun goes down, we can take the opportunity to begin to switch gears early enough to think about what we're going to do on the Sabbath or how we're going to observe the Sabbath. Let's turn to Exodus 16. We see this principle found here in Exodus 16, verse 23, with the Israelites. Exodus 16, verse 23. So in verse 23, he says, "And then he said to them, 'This is what the Lord has said. Tomorrow is a Sabbath rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you will bake today, and boil what you will boil, and lay up for yourselves all that remains to be kept until morning.' So they laid it up until morning, as Moses commanded, and it did not stink." You know, remember, they're in an environment without refrigerators and things like that, so it was very possible that the food would go bad. And I think we're talking about manna here, so it tended to last for a day. "Nor were there any worms in it. Then Moses said, 'Eat that today, for today is a Sabbath to the Lord. Today you will not find it in the field. Six days you shall gather it, but on the seventh day, the Sabbath, there will be none.'" So here we see the instruction given to the Israelites that they could prepare, they could rest by on the Sabbath if they prepared. Now this is a very good principle for us: prepare for the Sabbath. If we don't prepare for the Sabbath, then we'll just replace, you know, maybe our normal stresses with other stresses. You know, example, instead of stressing out and working to get, you know, kids' lunches ready and out the door, we just replace that with getting kids' snacks ready for church and toys and packing up the bags. Sometimes we can, I'm not speaking from experience necessarily, but but you know, sometimes you can just replace one normal stress with a different stress, right, if we're not preparing carefully. So what are some practical things we can do to prepare for the Sabbath? You know, I came across, as I was thinking about this, I was on, happened to go on UCG.org and found the perfect article, or a very apropos article anyway, that was just written by a lady named Darlene Lawstead, who appears to be a young mother, who has given this some thought and some good, and she puts out some good principles of how to prepare for a Sabbath, especially for young mothers. And I know that as soon as we had Billy, things seemed to change, and getting ready and out the door became more effort. And so I want to share some of these with you. It's definitely geared for families, her points, but I think you can actually apply these things to everybody, no matter what your situation. Now, the first point is my point, because actually I thought it applied, but the others are her points. So the first one of howing to prepare properly for the Sabbath, and these, again, things that we're still working on ourselves. We're not 100% there yet, but I thought they were good points. And when we've done these, it certainly did make the Sabbath a little easier to rest and focus properly. So the first one is prepare the car. Make sure the car is gassed up. More than once, I've jumped in the car. You know, if you happen to know, we'd actually drive my wife's car. I don't want to blame anybody here. But anyway, that wasn't my intent. I think I just actually threw her under the bus a little bit there. But anyway, we take her car, so I'm not always aware, and I come in from out of town. So we've jumped in the car, and with just a short amount of time ready to go, and just enough time to get to church properly. And I look down, the fuel gauge is, you know, beyond empty. The yellow light's on, it's blinking, says you're about to run out of gas. And, you know, that can actually cause unnecessary stress. You know, not only do you have to stop for gas, which you weren't planning on doing, and do some commerce, which generally we try to avoid. So the principle is prepare your car, you know, and put gas in it. You know, God certainly allows for oxes in the ditch, but trying to avoid the ditch ahead of time is a good principle. Now, these are some of Darlene's, the person I mentioned who wrote the article, some of her points. She said, prepare the bags. You know, I think everybody who's got children or has kids, whether they're grown or young, can relate to this. But every time we've had our bag, you know, Billy's bag prepared ahead of time with all the things he needs, and it's all ready to go, it certainly makes getting ready a lot easier. You may, if you have young ones, you know, you probably can relate to this, having your diaper bag ready with the diapers and the milk and all the things ready to go ahead of time with your Bibles, notebooks, choir music and snacks all ready to go, toys if they need toys for church and blankets all ready ahead of time can really help out as you're preparing to go to church and preparing on the Sabbath. Her other point, which I thought was good, and some other points, is preparing breakfast for the Sabbath day, you know, maybe having some food items for breakfast already prepared as much as possible, ready to go, can help out a little bit so you're not preparing a lot of time preparing meals. Preparing potluck or snacks for the food table. If we're having a potluck, you know, maybe preparing on Friday or before the Sabbath comes, having it ready. If you have a slow cooker, maybe having everything ready to go. So on Sabbath morning, just put it in there and turn it on, and all the ingredients are ready to go. So trying to prepare things for a potluck or the snack table. We have a snack table. You can sometimes, you know, have that ready ahead of time as well. And I'm sure many of us do that, but these are just reminders that may be helpful to you. Preparing the clothes, more than once, you know, I found myself trying to find the shoe that Billy left in the car with the shirt down the laundry with his pants up in his room and trying to get that ready for him in a short time, you know, with 10 minutes to go before church can be stressful. So having that laid out, knowing where the clothes are, having everything sort of ready to go for him, including ourselves, sometimes can be really helpful in preparing for the Sabbath and being reducing stress. Preparing the house, again, this is written the article is written for ladies, but it could also apply for men to help out with this. But many people find themselves stressed that the house is messy, so the recommendation is to try to clean up the house as much as possible on Friday, take care to do all the necessary cleaning as you can, you know, so you can relax and have, and if a messy house distracts you, you're not distracted at the Sabbath trying to clean up all the time. Again, preparing the kids is another one of her recommendations. You know, prepare the kids ahead of time with baths, if possible on Friday. Get them ready for the Sabbath by, you know, having certain look forward to the Sabbath, whether it's with meals with family and or eating with family and talking about God's word. I know we do that with Billy. We try to get them all ready for the Sabbath. Hey, you know, we're going to have a good Friday night meal, and we're going to have grandma and grandpa over most times. And it really helps them get in the mindset of the Sabbath and what it's about and what the next day, and the next day is usually a different routine, so they're kind of getting ready for a different routine. They know it's not school. Also, it might be nice for dads to, if you have kids, to take kids for a walk on the Sabbath outside, you know, give mom a bit of a rest. So she can also study and have some time to meditate and think about the Sabbath in a proper way. And her last point, which I thought was good, is prepare the mind. You know, prepare the mind. You know, you want to be prepared in these other physical things, but also we want to prepare our mind. So we talked about rest on the Sabbath, but we may be, instead of sleeping in, we may be actually be better benefited by preparing some time early in the morning before everybody wakes up to have some time to ourselves, to study, have some quiet time alone, meditation, Bible reading, and prayer. And before the day kicks off for everybody else, you know, if the kids wake up and all of a sudden the whole day kind of goes down a certain path, you know, maybe it's nice to prepare our mind for the Sabbath by getting up a little earlier, which seems like the opposite of what we want to do on the Sabbath. We want to sleep in a little bit longer, but I thought that was a good point to maybe in doing that. And these are just a few thoughts, but the key is preparation for the Sabbath, and it does contribute to having a more delightful Sabbath in the way God intended. And we all live busy lives, and we do the best we can, but we can prepare as much as possible. It's really helpful, and the Sabbath truly does have many, many benefits, and truly is a blessing to mankind for those who choose to keep it. There's an article by Nan Chase that I'd like to read to you, a writer of a Jewish background. So it's just somebody who may have kept the Sabbath in the past. She wrote an interesting article about rediscovering the Sabbath. And I'd like to read that to you. It's called Rediscovering the Sabbath. This is from her perspective. Of course, a Jewish perspective, but I think it kind of shows that keeping the Sabbath in the way intended has benefits across the board. So here's what she wrote. In a moment of divine inspiration, I decided to try an old-fashioned cure for my space-age blues. It's called the Sabbath, and it's a mental health tool that works as well today as it did 3,000 years ago. Now, if someone told you that there was a way to stop the onslaught of everyday obligations, improve your social life, keep the house clean, revive your tired marriage, elevate spiritual awareness, improve productivity at work, all overnight without cost, you would probably say the claim was absurd. I certainly did, but I was willing to see if some cosmic miracle cure could really work. No shopping or paying bills, no pulling weeds or pruning shrubs, nor cleaning or repairing the house. Not even talking about or thinking about work and the office. The Sabbath is a day without labor, a time to savor the sweetness of life with a delicious meal, wine, napping, reading, and strolling. Again, this is from her perspective, a Jewish lady who had obviously stopped keeping the Sabbath. So my personal life, my professional life, my family life have all improved. I plan to go on celebrating the Sabbath, the most powerful and illuminating discovery for me because of the sudden understanding of how an ancient edict, and it's interesting she put it that way, can have such thoroughly modern applications. My quest began at a marriage counselor's office. After 22 fruitful years of marriage, my husband Saul and I found ourselves deadlocked over a crisis of time management, of growth, and change. The first Sabbath I took Friday afternoon off from work to clean the house from top to bottom. If a family with three teenagers is going to get a day without work, we should start with everything extra clean. This practice proved to be an instant winner, and I have permanently changed my work week to the benefit of my home life. Saul came home from work Friday afternoon, cleared away a stack of bills, and before the sun went down, finished all they had to do. What next? Well, we felt duty bound to try the wine. And yes, even our relationship took on a profound and delightful new aspect. How marvelous to be told to make time to enjoy the physical and emotional pleasures of a mature relationship. Again, that's from a lady named Nan Chase that was published in 1997. Again, it's from a lady that's Jewish and she has a certain perspective, but I think it does kind of highlight that the Sabbath truly is a benefit, and we obviously would hopefully understand it a little bit more than she would, but it does remind us that many people don't keep the Sabbath, and this is somebody who grew up with awareness of it, chose to do it, and immediately saw the benefits of it, doing that and preparing for it. So the third principle I'd like to cover is to assemble. To assemble. Let's go to Leviticus 23, and let's notice what it tells us here in Leviticus 23 about assembling. First, again, the third principle is to assemble. So Leviticus 23, verse 1, we'll start there. Give everybody a moment to turn there. For those with iPads, you're probably already there. So, although most of us still use the old-fashioned turning the Bible away. So in Leviticus 23, verse 1, it says, "And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel and say to them, the feast of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, these are my feasts." And interesting, he starts off with the right next verse about the Sabbath. 6 days shall be done, 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, a holy convocation. You shall do no work on it. It is the Sabbath of the Lord in all your dwellings. Now let's examine the topic of holy convocation. The principle that we're coming to hear in verse 2 and 3 of this particular section is that we are told that we should have a holy convocation, which simply means to assemble together, in this case, assemble together for worship. Most of the commandments you could do by yourself, you know, if you really, you know, if you don't, you could be by yourself and never lie, and you could and do other little commandments. But in the case of the Sabbath, it tells us that we are required to congregate. To congregate. To assume that you're obeying God in the Sabbath covenant by staying home regularly is a great stretch of the Scriptures. You know, we are being summoned by God to assemble. Now, what are some of the principles we should consider when assembling together? Now, we're asked to come together here. Not stay at home, unless we're sick or unable to attend for health reasons, but we're asked to assemble together. So let's look at some of the principles around attending together, assembling together. One would be how we choose to appear to assemble before God. Again, we're being asked to come before God. Let's look at Leviticus 16, verse 4. And we're going to break into a section here about getting how the priests were getting for atonement, and they're going to the holy place as part of atonement. The holy place represented where God was to the Israelites. There is the Holy of Holies and represented it. And let's look at how the priests were dressed. Leviticus 16, verse 4. He shall put all the holy linen tunic and the linen trousers on his body. He shall be girded with a linen sash and with a linen turban, and shall be attired. These are holy garments. Therefore, he shall wash his body in water and put them on. So there's importance in how, as the priest, and were getting ready to represent Israel in front of the holy place, that they were dressed a certain way. They were coming essentially before God, and God expected them to be dressed in appropriately in a certain way. So we are to dress a certain way. Let's look at another example, another reminder in Matthew 22. Matthew 22, if you'd like to turn there with me, Matthew 22, verse 1. We'll get more insight to, as we assemble, I think all of us agree with that principle. We are to assemble on the Sabbath. But when we do assemble, we should be attired correctly. And I just bring this up. I don't think this is not something that I'm really addressing for this congregation, but I have been in other areas, and there seems to be differences of how to dress. So I remind us, as you may see, different feast sites, the way people that dress more casually, but we should not. We should be very careful how we dress and come before God. So Matthew 22, verse 1. And Jesus answered and spoke to them again by parables and said, "The kingdom of heaven is like a certain king who arranged a marriage for his son and sent out his servants to call those who were invited to the wedding, and they were not willing to come. Again, he sent out other servants saying, 'Tell those who are invited, see, I have prepared my dinner. My oxen and fatted cattle are killed, and all things are ready. Come to the wedding.' But they made light of it and went their ways, out to his own farm, another to his business. And the rest seized his servants, treated them spitefully, and killed them. But when the king heard about it, he was furious, and he sent out his armies, destroyed those murderers, and burned up their city. Then he said to his servants, 'The wedding is ready, but those who were invited were not worthy. Therefore, go into the highways, as many as you find, invite to the wedding.' So those servants went out into the highways and gathered together all whom they found, both good and bad. And the wedding hall was filled with guests. And when the king came to see the guests, he saw a man there who did not have on a wedding garment. So he said to him, 'Friend, how did you come in here without a wedding garment?' And he was speechless. Then the king said to the servants, 'Bind him hand and foot, take him away, and cast him into outer darkness. There'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. For many are called, but few are chosen.'" The parable refers to being dressed or clothed in righteousness. It certainly is the key idea, and that righteousness comes from God. But we also see a fundamental principle here that appearing respectfully before God is important, and how we dress is important. We should wear our best clothes for our culture. You know, what we wear in the United States might be different from, as we heard about the announcement in Nigeria. I know Al-Dari, and when they wear their best clothes, it's very different from what our clothes look like. But whatever culture we're in, we should wear our nicest clothes that are modest and respectful. And we should be properly groomed in our appearance. You know, I have met some folks in the past who didn't seem to think showers and washing hair as a necessary procedure before coming to church. But we should all do our best to be well-groomed, as it shows love towards God and our neighbors. Now, in some areas of the world, you know, running water may not be common, but I don't think that's the case in America, for most of us here in America. And as a principle, we should dress with the thought we are coming before God and dress appropriately. Another point of assembling is or being respectful in a way of being on time. In a respectful manner is being on time. We should do our best to be respectful to the song leader and speakers and the whole congregation by being on time. All of us have been late to church from time to time for reasons that, you know, God would understand. Maybe it's traffic or we, you know, something else happened that made us late. And we should do our best to be here on church before it starts. It does show respect to God and everyone else. So let's move on to principle number four, is that we should fellowship. Principle number four is that we should fellowship. We're told to fellowship. Now, after a week of having struggles that we go through, there's nothing more encouraging to talk and fellowship with like-minded people. To share in the struggles of others, to encourage them, and they encourage you, perhaps, with what you've gone through or struggled with, is very, very part of the fellowship of the church. Let's go to Hebrews 10, verse 23. It's an encouragement that we are to fellowship, to be together. Hebrews 10, verse 23 says, "Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful, and let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together." So we're not to, just not start attending church. We're supposed to be together, assembling for ourselves, and not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the sum of some, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. You know, we heard the announcement about from United getting together with Living. The way they expressed that was they can see the day approaching potentially. You know, they certainly see things in world events getting very serious, and you know, now's the time to not forsake our assembling together and exhorting one another. You know, Christ began the church, and the church has many purposes. One is that Christ knew those who are called out from the world, but still living in the world, would need a place to go every week to be fed spiritually, to fellowship. And the world can draw you back, but the church and the fellowship is a safeguard against the pulls of the world. We're all here to learn from one another, to encourage one another. When someone says, "Hey, I'm glad to see you, and I'm glad you're here," you know, that's encouraging. And we're here to stir up love and good works and help each other. We all learn from each other, as I said. We learn from the messages, we learn from special music, and even the prayers. And I'm encouraged when I know those who have serious struggles stay faithful and keep coming to church. That gives me encouragement. We're not to be the CCG, the Couch Church of God, staying home and listening to sermons online. But we're here to be, if all possible, we should be here to assemble and fellowship. That is a principle of keeping the Sabbath, is being with brethren. Let's go to principle number five, that we should do good on the Sabbath. We should do good on the Sabbath. It is a principle of the Sabbath. Let's turn to Mark 3, and we'll start in verse 1. Mark 3, verse 1. And he entered, in verse 1, he says, "And he entered the synagogue again, and a man was there who had a withered hand. So they watched him closely, whether he could heal him on the Sabbath, so they might accuse him. And he said to the man who had the withered hand, 'Step forward.' And he said to them, 'Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do evil, to save life or to kill?' But they kept silent. And when he had looked around at them with anger, because he's being grieved by the hardness of their hearts, he said to the man, 'Stretch out your hand.' And he stretched it out, and his hand was restored as whole as the other." So we are to do good, as Christ was saying here. Jesus was making the point, we are to do good on the Sabbath. So how can we apply this, you know, in our own lives? Well, we can pray for those who are sick or in trials. We can give them a call. If you know people are struggling or are at home and having difficult times, we can visit those who are unable to come to church. You know, I just visited a church recently. I was out of town. I went to a church area, and I asked a man that was there if he would like to go to dinner with us after church. Church was in the evening or late afternoon, so I said, "Would you like to go to church with us? We're going to go get dinner." And he was very gracious and said, well, he'd like to, but he actually had prepared a meal to take over to a 90-year-old lady who was not able to attend church anymore because she was very, you know, she wasn't physically able to come to church. You know, that example stuck with me. He was doing good on the Sabbath. We can write cards or letters to those who are sick or not able to come to church anymore. I know there were ladies here and children that helped them make baskets this year for the people that could not go to the church or could go to the feast this year. You know, that's very helpful. We can invite those who don't have families to dinner to our homes on a Friday night to share a meal. I once had, I think I read or heard that there are, you know, singles, being a single person in the church is very lonely on a Friday night sometimes. And maybe we can help that situation by inviting those who don't have families in the church and maybe on their own to our home for dinner on Friday night, if all possible. These are things that are doing good on the Sabbath. These are things that are, you know, these type of things. And you can probably come up with your own list, how to do good on the Sabbath. Principle number 6 is, when in doubt, follow Isaiah 58 as a guide. When in doubt, follow Isaiah 58 as a guide. Now, there's always questions that come up over the years about certain activities on the Sabbath. Can I watch TV? Can I listen to the radio or iPod? Can I play a video game? Can I read the sports page? Can I go swimming on the Sabbath? Can I go for a jog? You know, you keep going on and on. If you get caught up on those questions, you'll never end. These are questions that we can look at Isaiah 58 for to help us, guide us personally, and how to answer these questions for ourselves and what we think is the right thing to do. So let's turn to Isaiah 58, verse 13. Isaiah 58, verse 13. It says, if you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy day of the Lord honorable, and shall honor him, not doing your own ways, nor finding your own pleasure, nor speaking your own words, then you shall delight yourself in the Lord. And I will cause you to ride on the high hills of the earth, and feed you with the heritage of Jacob, your father. The mouth of the Lord has spoken. When we're posed with questions about, you know, the nuances of what's appropriate, like watching TV or going for a jog, we should look at the principle in Isaiah 58. You know, does it relate to finding our own pleasure? Is it something that we want to do? And we should answer that in our own minds and hearts. And is it honoring God? Does that activity really honor God? Each person has to decide whether they're doing something for their own pleasure or whether this is honoring God in their actions. Isaiah 58 guides our actions. And when in doubt, then it would probably be better to avoid the action. We cannot clearly state it is honoring God. My sense is that we probably would remove activities by doing this, by using this principle, when we look at what we should do on the Sabbath or not. You know, should we do this or should we do that? We probably would maybe, you know, remove a few. Each person has to answer that for themselves. I think when we're honest about knowing the purpose for wanting to do something in the activity, and we're guided by the Holy Spirit, we come to the right decision. So again, the principle is, when in doubt about how should we do something or not, look at Isaiah 58 as a guide. The Sabbath is certainly important, and how we observe the Sabbath does matter. We don't want to come up with a list of hundreds of do's and don'ts like the Pharisees did, and what we can do and can't do, but we also don't want to be casual about the day either. The 6 principles today help us observe the Sabbath in the way God intended. We don't work, we rest, we assemble, We fellowship, we follow Jesus' example of doing good on the Sabbath, and we use Isaiah 58 as an overarching guide to help us avoid doing our own pleasure on the Sabbath. As I mentioned at the beginning, how we observe the Sabbath is one indicator of our relationship with God. We see our Sabbath observance is a bit lax or casual, or not taking on the importance in our lives that God expects. It may be a sign to renew and strengthen our relationship with God through prayer, study, and fasting. So let's all take time to review our approach to the Sabbath, and if required, make the necessary changes that will be pleasing to God.